Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Hello, a very good morning. How are you on the programme today? Cork Library closed to protect staff and users. A Green Party councillor has a proposal to tackle those who closed its doors. Red wine and fish, Pringles and whipped cream, lasagna and chips. The food combinations that just should not be allowed. We'll be going live to Brisbane ahead of the Girls in Green's final World Cup fixture and extreme world weather. The stories from around the world that didn't make the headlines here. Also, our parenting expert, Dr. David Coleman, is going to be here to answer your questions. Please get in touch with those. Text us on 51551 or you can also email todaycb@rte.ie. He will be here with us after 11 o'clock. Going to start this morning with a front page story from the Irish Times. A split has emerged in the government's housing commission over proposals for a constitutional referendum on a right to housing. That's according to the paper, which tells us that the commission is expected to give a majority and minority report as agreement can't be reached on several aspects of the issue. In a moment, I'm going to be speaking to Rachel Walter, Social Associate Professor in the School of Law in Trinity College Dublin. First, though, Jack Horgan-Jones is the political reporter with the Irish Times who has the story. Very good morning to you, Jack. Bit of a fractious picture emerging here from within the Commission. Take us through what the split is over.
Well, it's effectively over a couple of things, all of which relate to the one of the missions of the Housing Commission, which is to advise the government on the proposal for a referendum on the right to housing to be inserted in the constitution, and on the wording of that proposal. Basically, the Housing Commission has kind of divided into two camps. One of which has one of which supports a rather lengthy report that was drawn up last year and then revised this year, and has now in draft format been sent to the Minister for Housing, Dara Brian. And the other camp, which is a smaller camp, it must be said, which has some concerns over the structure of that report, but also the specific place in which the proposed amendment to the Constitution would go in.
And this is very much out of the context of the way that the Commission has been working to date. Of the nine different areas that it was charged with, eight of them they have been making good progress on.
Yeah, it's exactly the kind of list of stuff that you'd imagine the Housing Commission to look at. It's kind of the whole raison d'etre of the Housing Commission is to look out beyond 2030 and to kind of future-proof the state's housing policy and look at things like, do we have the correct amount of houses to be built in the housing for all targets, or do we have, you know, the right approach to the rental market, or what kind of materials are going to be used? It's that kind of, you know, horizon scanning, sense checking, future proofing. But at the very end of the terms of reference, there is this ninth point, which is, can you look at the issue of a referendum on housing, and can you advise on the wording? And the reason that's in there is because there's a programme for government commitment to at some stage in the lifetime of the coalition hold a referendum on housing.
So is that key to this then, that they were asked to come up with a wording, not whether there should or shouldn't be a referendum?
Yeah, the commitment is there. It was agreed in the programme for government negotiations back following the general election of 2020, and it had been in the ether for some time before then. There were various civil society groups that had been advocating for the insertion of a right to housing in the constitution, largely as a counterweight, the argument ran, to the very strong property rights that exist in the constitution. There is a school of thought basically that says that has been a bulwark or a barrier to some housing interventions that may address the wider housing crisis.
And it would appear that the majority on the commission are broadly sympathetic with that point of view.
They're broadly supportive of the proposal and the need for a referendum. But it's not their call as to whether a referendum should be held. That is a programme for government commitment. What they were supposed to do was advise eyes on this kind of complex and delicate task and the specific wording, because as we all know, when it comes to the political commitment, that can be made quite easily. When it comes to deciding where in the Constitution something goes and the rights that may flow from that and the specifics of the wording, that's where things can get a little more tricky.
Those are interesting points. Let's get onto them in a moment, though. Tell me about the minority view and why they feel that there doesn't need to be a referendum.
Well, it's not that they don't think there needs to be a referendum. It's exactly, it's some of the detail of the proposal. So as I understand it, one camp within the commission believes that the right to housing should be inserted in a part of the Constitution, Article 45, which is known as directive principles, which is basically something that the Oireachtas or the government should be minded towards when it's formulating policy, as opposed to in Articles 40 to 44, which would create a fundamental right for people, which they could then take a case against the state if it failed to vindicate that right.
So Article 45, if it was to be inserted there, it's aspirational, it's non-binding. If it's placed elsewhere earlier in the Constitution, well, then it becomes something that somebody could use to vindicate their rights before the courts.
Aspirational, non-binding, and usually ignored by the Oireachtas, it must be said as well. There are some other issues around the structure of it. Some people on the Commission believe that instead of a single formulation of words that would be proposed to the government, there should have been a list of options, one of which the Commission would say, we favour this one, but here's some other options if you'd like to pull a different lever in a different way. And then there's this wider issue which pertains to the structure of the Housing Commission itself. There are constitutional law experts on it, and there was a subcommittee set up to look at this issue, but the clue is in the name. The vast majority of people sitting on the Housing Commission are experts in housing policy, not constitutional law, so there is a feeling in some quarters that, you know, they're not necessarily qualified to make this kind of quite complex and technical recommendation to the government on what can be a fairly divisive issue.
But the subcommittee that was considering it was composed of a number of people who would have that legal expertise.
Yeah, chaired by an expert in constitutional law, and they also ran a series of kind of, you know, expert forums. I think the former Chief Justice Frank Clark was involved, and they ran public consultations as well, so there was a public-facing element to it as well.
Stay with me, I want to come back to you in a moment, but I want to bring in Rachel Walsh, the Associate Professor at the School of Law and Trinity College Dublin. Rachel, what do you make of what you're hearing this morning?
Hi, it's very good to kind of have an update, I suppose, on where the Commission proposals are at this juncture. As I think Jack indicated, we've been waiting for this report to come through for quite some time. It's very interesting to see the split around, in particular, the location, the appropriate location of any amendments that might be made in respect of rights on housing, and to see Article 45, the directive principles, being, if you like, resurfaced in the context of this debate, it is very interesting in that those principles, as I think Jack alluded to, have been largely dormant in the constitutional framework over most of its history since 1937. They are, as Jack said there, as aspirational principles.
Okay, can I put it in layperson's terms, Rachel, and tell me if I'm wrong here, that if any article did get inserted into 45, that it would effectively be toothless?
The idea is that it's there for the guidance of the political branches of government rather than for the courts, and that's expressly stated in the introduction to that article. So the idea is that it should guide political action in the spheres of social policy. As Jack mentioned, there's no real evidence that it has done that in a meaningful way, and those principles can't be relied on directly in the courts by individuals to assert any of the ideas or principles or values that are stated therein.
Do you think it's possible to come up with a wording that would be binding and that would actually vindicate people's housing rights, or are they always going to end up bumping and grinding up against the parts of the Constitution that guarantee people's property rights?
I mean, there's two important interactions that we have to think about with the housing rights issue. The first is obviously with property rights, and as Jack alluded to, there is a question over whether we need a housing right to, if you like, mitigate or soften the effect of the property rights provisions in the Constitution. And the other slightly more abstract constitutional principle that's relevant when we talk about a right to housing is the idea that there's a separation between the powers of the courts on the one hand and the powers of the political branches on the other hand, and that, if you like, the courts don't generally tell the political branches of government how to spend money in particular. So obviously a constitutional right to housing, depending on how strong the framing of a constitutional right to housing might be, could have the consequence that the courts might have to make decisions that would direct how public monies should be spent. So that's why we often see discussion around rights to housing trying to, if you like, strike a middle ground between something that's directly enforceable tomorrow to give somebody an immediate right to housing and a more symbolic type guarantee like we would have, for example, if something was included in Article 45. The tricky part with the right to housing is finding somewhere between those provisions, if you like, that is meaningful and something that can be asserted in court, but at the same time doesn't result in too much of an interference by the courts with the ordinary democratic process that works out how public monies should be spent.
Talk to me about the South African principle, the principle that came from South Africa, of progressive realisation and how that impacts on this.
Yes, and I'm sure, I mean, probably the most high-profile right to housing in a constitution internationally is the South African example. So, you know, we don't know precisely what the Commission is considering, but certainly at those expert forums that were held, the South African example was discussed in a lot of detail. Progressive realisation is essentially a recognition that there are certain types of rights that it's unrealistic to expect can be enforced or introduced into a society overnight through a constitutional provision, and it instead tries to deal with, if you like, social policy prioritisation within a constitution. So basically it says that the state has to work progressively, that is over time, with a degree of purpose, if you like, to realise a particular right, recognising that available resources, how much money we have to spend, will impact on how quickly a costly right, such as a right to housing, can be introduced. So it's not saying that there's no obligation on the state, but at the same time, it's recognising that something like a right to housing is a project that we have to work to over time, rather than something that can be instantaneously achieved.
Can I be excused for suggesting that that sounds potentially a little bit woolly, that it's really saying no more than government has to do its job well?
So it allows the court, for example, to do things like look at the policies that are being implemented and the amount of resources that are available in the state and try to have a degree of oversight over how much priority is being given to housing, for example. And there is evidence in the South African context that this has been successfully litigated in the courts and that progress on rights has been achieved through this progressive realisation mechanism. At the same time, it's not achievable overnight. And that is, as I said, a recognition of the fact that there is this background concern with the court's relationship to the democratically to the democratic process and how much control the court should really have over the expenditure of public money.
Back to the question of whether we should have a referendum on housing in this country or not. As you've already pointed out, Article 43 of the Constitution does say that there will be no attempt to abolish the right of private ownership or the general right to inherit and transfer and bequeath property and so on. The same article also says a little bit later on that the state accordingly may, as occasion requires, delimit by law the exercise of said rights with a view to reconciling their exercise with the exigencies of the common good. Is that not an implied right to housing within the Constitution already?
I don't think we could go so far as to say that it's an implied right to housing, Philip, but certainly it gives the political branches of government power to act to achieve the common good and social justice. And part of doing that is obviously bringing in legislation that would expand housing availability in Ireland, for example, and increase individuals' rights in respect of housing. So it doesn't give you an individual right to housing, but I would suggest it empowers the state to act to secure housing, and it makes it clear that property rights shouldn't be a barrier to the state acting to achieve the public good, essentially.
So how might an actual referendum on housing be different to that and guarantee people more?
I suppose the debate is around whether what we would be voting on would be a standalone right to housing, that is a new provision introduced into the Constitution, or whether one idea that had been floated had been that the provisions in respect of housing would be added into the property rights provisions of the Constitution. Either way, the idea is that there would be a balancing of rights that would have to occur. So, for example, if you had a dispute between private property rights on the one hand and rights in respect of housing on the other hand, both of those would be on a constitutional footing expressly. I would have a constitutional right to housing as an individual that I could assert, rather than having to rely on the political process through the exercise of that power we just spoke about in the context of property rights to achieve my objective. So there would be something there in the Constitution that would allow me to come to court and assert that the right to housing is on an equal footing to property rights within the constitutional structure.
Rachel Walsh, thank you very much. Back to Jack Horgan-Jones, another element to your story this morning is that members of the Commission had received death threats from far-right groups. How did you ascertain this?
Well, I was kind of flabbergasted when I heard it first, to be frank. I heard it first actually several months ago and, you know, had it established to the point where I was going to put it in the story. And the Housing Commission, through a spokesperson, came back and confirmed that there were threats issued to several members of the Commission late last year. My understanding.
To what effect?
Well, my understanding is that they're up to including death threats and that the suspicion is that these emanated from far-right activists. And
for even contemplating having a referendum or for a specific wording? Or what were they saying?
Well, the specific wording still isn't known, so it wouldn't have been in relation to any specific wording. It would have been in relation to just the idea of holding a referendum on housing. And speaking to some colleagues who looked at the far right and how they operate in Ireland, I came to understand that, you know, this idea of holding a referendum has been a kind of totemic galvanising issue for people who kind of operate in that sphere. There's been various conspiracy theories circulated that, you know, effectively stemming from that right would be all sorts of, you know, non-factual assertions such as, you know, expropriation of housing from Irish people in favour of migrants coming in, or that it would provide some kind of cover for investment funds.
Exaggerated funds.
Exactly, exaggerated conspiracy theories, which I suppose speaks to a wider problem that exists within politics these days, that, you know, you can have a normal, reasoned debate on any policy point and people will come down both in favour and against it. But within that, there is always the potential for, you know, radical or fringe or conspiracy-minded individuals to latch on to some element of that. And you know, we have this distancing effect of online interaction where, you know, people then begin to issue death threats and stuff like that to people who, it must be said, are acting in the public interest on, you know, in their own time to try and address this political and policy issue.
And what action did the Commission take on footing these threats?
My understanding is that it was reported to the Gardaí, and the Gardaí gave advice to the individuals concerned and to the Commission writ large about how it should proceed in light of the threats.
Okay, thank you very much. Jack Horgan-Jones, political reporter with the Irish Times. Housing from a totally different point of view coming up after this break.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.